The show that doesn't grab them by the but does occasionally kick them in the balls. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network, and boy, do we have a lot to cover today, including local news from here in Maui that's made national news about a missing woman, a North Korean cargo ship bound for Samoa, and, of course, the latest from Donald Trump and the world as we know it. Before we get into all of that, brief introductions are in line. Hi, my name's Shaggy. I am a critical thinker, problem solver, guy just left of normal and sane and always centered in common sense, and found at my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served, at Shaggy Live. We begin today with a story that is literally happening within about 2 miles of my house. You see, I live in Pukalani, Hawaii. That's where this show is recorded and broadcast from. And we are about 2 miles out of the Makawao Forest Reserve. Now, if you've been following any of the news out of Maui on a grand scale, in other words, the stuff that actually makes national news, you'll know that we have another missing persons case. This time, it is 35-year-old Amanda Eller. Now, a couple of nights ago, she was reported missing. That was like on May 9th. And ever since then, everybody has been kind of like flocking around the area of Maui that we call upcountry, hunting dogs, with search teams, and with a full concentrated effort. As of yesterday, the Maui Fire Department has suspended their search efforts. However, the Maui Police Department does continue to search. And there is a huge volunteer effort behind all of this. Now, of course, this isn't the first missing case here on Maui. And it's not the first one in recent memory that involves a woman who had went hiking or was known to love nature by themselves to have disappeared. Now, before we talk about any of the other cases, let's just go ahead and talk about Maui lifestyle, since, once again, this story is literally happening within 2 miles of where this show is being broadcast from. And as such, I can tell you that the culture of Maui is very much exactly as wilderness as you would believe. People like Amanda Eller, who works for a yoga salon, a yoga spa in Makawao, she is not alone. Time after time again, no matter where I go on Maui, either it's up in Olinda in the hiking trails where they are currently doing the search for Amanda Eller, or it's in Iao Valley, or anywhere you go on Maui, time and time again you will see women just kind of meditating, taking in things, working on their crafts and stuff. We're a very bohemian community, so seeing people out on their own in nature, trying to find a little seclusion on a very crowded island, that's really nothing new. However, sadly, also, people going missing under those circumstances is nothing new as well. And the Amanda Eller story is really just, if you follow anything that happens in the 50th state, another story of a missing person that has happened under mysterious circumstances, and nobody ever finds a clue. Now, not too long ago, we had closed the case of Charlie Scott. She was the pregnant mother who also worked in the area of Makawao, who had went missing way back, I think in 2017. Of course, her boyfriend was eventually found guilty of her murder. There is also Mo. We are still trying to find Mo. She has not been seen since 2015 when she went missing. And then, of course, there is various case after case after case of man and woman going missing on Maui with nothing ever found. And the cases for missing persons in Maui, particularly Maui, have been ramping up as of late. So much so that Let's just be honest. No matter who you are on this island right now, we're all kind of a little paranoid about where we go, when we go there, who's around when we do. And if you start to go through how many people have started to mysteriously disappear on Maui and the escalation of those numbers over just the past 2 years, you'll realize that the Amanda Eller case could possibly, if things come into light like they have in previous cases, have some sinister overtone. Now, I am going to say that as a person that lives here, we are all very much hoping and praying that, well, Amanda Eller is found safe. But knowing the area that you were searching, and with all of the animals and stuff that are brought in, let's just go ahead and say that it's not looking good. And this isn't the first time it's happened on Maui either. So think about that the next time you think about that sun-stretched beach that you just really want to lounge on with a Mai Tai in your hand and let your cares go away. The island that is currently probably one of the most tourist destinations in the world is also one of the ones where people are going missing at a very alarming rate. Now, as of yet, nobody has ever found any connection between missing persons and a single entity. So it's not like we're looking at a serial case. It's just, for all intents and purposes, the island seems to be, well, enveloping people and taking them into places that we just can't find them. And that is probably one of the scariest things of island life right now. Now, if you think that this island is scared, you have no idea how scared they are in our Pacific neighbor, America Samoa. You see, Samoa is one of those places that is a port for United States operations. The United States Navy operates out there, and of course, several public and private enterprises work out of the harbors in Pago Pago. But this is the thing that is going to be elevating their blood level really, really heavily. That's going to be a North Korean ship. The ship was called the Wise Honor. Not too long ago, the United States seized this ship, saying that basically, you're in violation of some international sanctions, and we need to search for any sort of contraband. So the ship being seized in waters offside of Korea, well, outside of Korea, was towed into Pago Pago in Samoa. And the Wise Honest, as it's being towed in, was kind of greeted with a lot of nervous glances as, what is that thing doing there? Now, of course, the Pacific Fleet commanders, when you ask them anything about it, like, if you ask somebody in the Coast Guard, they have a quote online that you can Google and find from Amanda Wierick. She says that we have a good, strong relationship and partnership with the American Samoan government. With that being said, we also already have the resources that are able to ensure the security of the vessel, but most importantly, the port of Pago Pago. Now, here's the thing. That harbor isn't really made for something of this scale. And when I say of this scale, members of the FBI, members of the various military branches, and other security personnel are going en route to Samoa. And when they get there, they're going to open up the ship and go through it piece by piece by piece. Once again, a small Pacific harbor is going to have the innards of a cargo ship spilled out all over it. Now, that's going to vastly complicate things for the American Samoan island, at least in the interim. But while the Justice Department is doing the investigation, and they, once again, have been on record as saying, we're going to do this investigation as fast as we can, you have to remember that the Marine and Safety Security team had to be flown in from Honolulu. You know, my state. Hawaii. They're also conducting random patrols there. And as the ship got closer, of course, they ramped up their searches of vessels in the harbor. Now, they're looking for security breaches, vandalism, but specifically evidence that the ship that was going to go into North Korea not only was violating the sanctions imposed on it for, you know, the normal sanctions, I should say, that we're trying to get them back to the negotiation table. Well, how long have we tried that? Okay, anyway, moving on. The thing is that with all of these actions in play, North Korea possibly could be escalating their threats against America Samoa again. Now, when I say again, let's not forget that not too long ago, very famously, on New Year's, we all got woke up here in Hawaii with a ballistic missile test, or what we thought was an incoming ballistic missile from North Korea. That was what our phone said, and of course everybody panicked, and I spent the rest of the day trying to calm down my kid. But with not knowing buttons aside, the reason that we had that drill that led into the big Hawaii missile ballistic scare was because at that time, North Korea was ramping up its rhetoric behind attacks against America Samoa. They basically said that, you know what? You guys are going to put sanctions on us. We're going to attack your territories within our missiles' operational range. And everybody in Samoa, Guam, and all the other United States territories that found themselves under the bubble, including one United States, us. Well, of course, that was at the time. Now, of course, nobody knows the true range of a North Korean delivery system. With that being said, though, one thing that has been safe within their reach this whole time is the Samoan island. And now with the ship being confiscated out of Korean waters and taken there because it possibly violates sanctions, and oh, by the way, they're really not saying this out loud, but the reason that there's so many security people swarming on this boat is they're trying to find out where North Korea is getting all these supplies to make all of these missiles and things. Are they coming in by water? Are they coming in by land? There's only one way to find out. Find a boat that violates sanctions and tow it to a friendly harbor. Problem is with that friendly harbor is that in the long run, that harbor could end up being a little too friendly to missile attacks. And that's one of the things that's got people in Samoa right now a little bit wary of the boat that sits in their harbor. Now, with all of these stories out of the Pacific, I could probably go on and on and on about how this state is just really kind of going nuts ahead of the 2020 election, but we actually have to cover some of the news of the 2020 election. Now, we begin, of course, with some of our Democratic mentionables. And by that, I mean that there are so many people in this current field of Democrats that it's hard to tell who really is a leader. Now, with all kinds of polls pointing towards Joe Biden being the most electable, Bernie Sanders being the most funded right now is kind of struggling with gaining his former upper hand that he had back in the 2016 presidential cycle. And all of these guys right now are kind of wrestling with one question in general. How do you deal with Trump on the campaign trail? Now, if we look at the forerunner or the front runners of the race right now, you can pretty much go through a list like this. Kamala Harris is trying to basically drum up her image as a public servant in the judicial branch. In other words, you know, hey, remember me? I was kind of a high-to-do prosecutor. And as such, knowing all of this lawyering and legalese, I'm the kind of person that will be able to get behind these investigations into Trump, into Russia, into the intelligence, into the electioneering from Russia, and really be able to make a difference. She has been hammering that message ever since Joe Biden entered into the ring, because Kamala Harris hasn't actually been doing all that good, not even in her home state. But with this latest round of re-imaging of herself as the Matlock of the Democratic Party, you have to say Matlock because that's the only reference that's legal and Trump would actually understand. Yeah, with her running as the Matlock, it's actually kind of helped boost response behind her. Now, of course, we have other politicians that are going after Trump in a completely different way. And one of the guys that's kind of been out there, and I mean way out there, but now as the race starts to get closer and closer, we talk more and more about, it's Mayor Pete Buttigieg. The thing about him is that he has the most interesting strategy right now when it comes to confront Trump. Don't. Just don't. Instead, he goes after the ideologies of Mike Pence. Because, you know, again, they served with each other in the great Hoosier state together. And as such, Pete feels that it's a lot safer for him to go after Mike Pence, Mike Pence's public record of support for Donald Trump, despite Donald Trump being alleged to have done horrible, horrible things. In other words, he's found a way of dealing with Trump by circumventing dealing with Trump directly. And as such, if you watch the president's Twitter feed, it seems that he's not really, really paying all that attention to Mayor Pete. But Mayor Pete does seem to be zeroing in on the message of Mike Pence basically is a bad guy because of his support of Donald Trump, who vis-a-vis is a bad guy too. But because it's safe for Buttigieg to talk about Pence, that seems to be his main strategy. Now, he does bring up all the other national topics that all the other candidates do as usual on the campaign trail. But, you know, the thing is that with all of these candidates in the Democratic field, it's kind of interesting, like, especially when we talk about Joe Biden, Cory Booker, and then the one from the state of Hawaii, who, if elected, would be the first Hindu president of the United States, Tulsi Gabbard. Now, when we talk about some of the more obscure candidates, though, I want to bring up single-issue candidates, and one of the most, well, interesting ones is the guy trying to save us all from the robot apocalypse. I'm talking, of course, about former tech entrepreneur, nonprofit magnate, Andrew Yang. Now, he entered the race November 6, 2018 on one issue, basically. Protect Americans from robots. Well, at least the robots that steal jobs. And he's the son of Taiwanese immigrants. He sells himself as the opposite of Trump. He's basically the ego-free Asian man who likes math. 44 years of age, but think about that. His big platform is stopping Americans from losing their jobs to robot. No, he also has an idea for the economy, $1,000 monthly check sent to every American over 18 so they can pay their bills as the robots take over their jobs. Now, the thing is, has such a little chance of getting ahead in a field that is polluted with political clout, but here's the thing about campaign. As time goes on, and even guys with only 62,000 followers like Andrew Yang, even guys like them will eventually concede a loss to another candidate and endorse them. In other words, give up the people that were supporting them to another person in the candidacy. Now, here's the thing. As that happens, the single-issue candidates usually find their issues wrapped up with other issues in the more popular candidates as the race goes on. So it kind of makes you wonder, with the crazy idea. And honestly, let's look into it. It's not that crazy of an idea. Over the past couple of years, the American gross domestic product has actually been going up. Manufacturing has been going up. But where are the jobs? The jobs are gone. You see, time and time and time again, manufacturing jobs are finding ways to automate functions. And versus hiring some Americans to do the jobs, they just build a warehouse, throw a couple of robots in, and start building away. That's why the economy looks good. But if you're somebody that's trying to find a job, it sure doesn't feel good. And as crazy as it sounds, it makes you wonder, as the race goes on, who's going to be the candidate that inherits Andrew Yang's momentum in, let's stop the robots. Please, stop the robots. Now, of course, there's more centrist characters out there. There's a couple of people that you expect, like Elizabeth Warren, and I guess we could talk about Bernie Sanders, but the Washington State Governor and veteran Congress member, Jay Inslee, he is the one that came in on March 1st, basically on a platform of environmental protection and stopping climate change. Now, the thing is that he has a lot of supporters, including Bill Nye, the science guy of all people. But let's not forget, Bill Nye, the science guy, started off on a show called, I think it was Seattle Tonight, that was on Comedy Channel, which became Comedy Central way back in the day before Bill Nye, the science guy, took off as an individual property. He was a skit on a skit comedy late night show. So with that said, Bill Nye's popularity aside, all of that stuff was born in the city of Seattle. So you could see how they would throw their support behind it. But Inslee's kind of push for privacy regulations for the tech industry, for the whole embracing technology in the maritime industry to make it more efficient, because once again, I live in Hawaii and I can tell you all about dirty big boats that come in and out of the harbors. Did you know that nobody actually polices those boats? Yeah, so if you can look at a boat from a satellite and look at the oil slick, that boat didn't run through the oil slick. It didn't cling on it from a harbor and it drag it out to sea. No. Most of your huge cargo vessels are actually leaking petroleum like a sieve into the ocean. And Inslee kind of knows that and has been wanting to try to find ways to engage in finding solutions, cleaner solutions, for big freight over the water and, of course, for smaller commercial fishing enterprises as all. Now, he's sponsored by a bunch of climate guys, but here's the thing. A candidate like him, once again, he's 68, he's just kind of, you know, out there. He's got a lot of Twitter followers. He's got less than 200,000, but you see, he's definitely up over Yang. So a chance that a guy like this could be one of the people that finds his cause endeared to another candidate should he not push through, because here's the thing. As we get closer to the 2020 elections, a lot of people on the left are starting to look for issue-based politicians. And Inslee has this kind of long, long, long public history of always getting out and decrying, help on climate change and other things. So this is going to really endear him to people that worry about, you know, the environment or the oncoming environmental disasters. Now, his tech-focused solutions are likely to appeal to, you know, the tech industry. But at the end of the day, will he go all the way? Let's go ahead and say the likelihood doesn't seem big at this point. But with some of his policies out there of being rooted around what Democrats have been trying to accomplish with the Green New Deal, okay? And believe it or not, all that bill does is encourage us to have talks to meet certain, mileposts by a certain year. In other words, let's set hard, hard, hard agenda items and then start having conversations if or not we can hit them. And if we can't, what can we do? In other words, the Green New Deal isn't this draconian, we're going to take away farting cows and airplanes from you. It's actually kind of common sense. And people like Inslee from Washington, they're going to be the type of people that will be the big vocal pushers of, well, not only the Green New Deal, but of legislation just like it. Now, considering that he's backed with the Super PAC Act Now on Climate, if he doesn't make it all the way, there is a good chance that they could, once again, shift over to the candidate that aligns themselves with Inslee's base. And the more that you look at the wide range of Democratic contenders, not as actual people in popularity like Hickenlooper. Yeah, there's a guy named Hickenlooper. John Hickenlooper. He has about 130,000 Twitter followers, and that's about it. But with all of these people in this field, it's going to be harder and harder to keep track of them by name. So if you keep track of what issues are in play and what issues are in play across multiple candidates, you'll see that some of these smaller, less talked about on the national scene candidates with popular platforms might actually be influencing the platform that makes it to the presidential candidacy. Who will eventually win, though? Too many people to tell. We'll be back and talk more about Donald Trump and his praising of responsible governments around the world. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
News, less alternative facts. It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back. If you missed any part of the first part of our show, well, what are you doing? Jump on things like Podbean or iTunes or Spotify and look for the Shaggy Jenkins Show, because we are literally everywhere. You can also find me on my website, shaggyjenkins.com, or wherever fine social media is served at Shaggy Live. Hi, welcome back. Before we get into any of the stories of what's happening domestically with Donald Trump, I want to talk a little bit about Donald Trump and his foreign reputation. You see, going into the 2020 elections, things between Donald Trump and certain despotic leaders of the world are looking particularly, shall we say, cozy. In the latest example of that, in a recent visit to the White House, Viktor Orban, you'll know him as the Hungarian Prime Minister, he stopped in to visit Donald Trump. And Donald Trump said that he was, well, not Trump, but Orban, was respected all over Europe, had kept Hungary very safe. However, he doesn't tell you how he kept, quote-unquote, Hungary safe. Donald Trump regards free and open media as one of the active members of enemies of the state, and so does Orban. And as such, this is the thing that Donald Trump likes about these despotic leaders. See, the Hungarian prime minister decided to make a couple of papers illegal, close down their operations, start locking up journalists and putting them on faux trials before locking them away for hard labor and long sentences. In other words, he had started to crack down on free media. And as he cracked down on free media, of course, he also cracked down on, you guessed anything about governmental checks and balances against his office of the prime minister, you are absolutely correct. You see, Orban has been one of those leaders that Donald Trump kind of cozies up to because, I don't know, maybe he does want to figure out how do you wreck an entire country's government in such a way that you end up on top. Now, when it comes to Orban and European policy holders and policy makers, they have always been on the side of something isn't right with this guy. Now, just like Donald Trump, he's very tough on immigration. He's basically left boats out in the sea at some point. He has very, very close ties with the Ukraine, as well as Vladimir Putin, who he has always, Orbán this is, stressed that he wishes to have closer ties with. Now, think about that. He's against a free and open media. He calls them the fake news. He calls them enemy of the state. He, unlike Trump, has the power to lock up journalists and close down publications. Goes in front of his people time and time again and says, hey, you know what? Russia isn't so bad. We should really be cozying up to Vladimir Putin. And if you just replace Orbán with Donald Trump, you can see these men are almost exactly alike. Now, of course, when he was speaking to reporters, Trump said, I know he's a tough man, but he's a respected man and he's done the right thing, according to many people, on immigration. Think about that. Donald Trump, who really is anti-immigrant, is admiring a guy that is openly anti-immigration for xenophobic, racist reasons. Oh, and in this xenophobia that Orbán kind of exudes with his office, he has the carte blanche to do it right in front of the European Union, and they don't react to him. Well, they do react. They say bad things about him, but let's face it, nobody's really going after Hungary anytime soon. So with that kind of defiance and that kind of what Donald Trump sees as a world acceptance of that type of behavior, it seems almost like serendipity that they would find themselves in the same office, the Oval Office, that is, talking about ways that their powerful governments work together. And sometimes I wonder, in Donald Trump's case, is it work more alike? Now, if you've been following any of the news of the latest of Donald Trump, let's just go ahead and say that yesterday, the Dow Jones and basically the world economy, let's just go ahead and call it what it is. The world economy lost over $1 trillion in value in one single day. The Dow was down over 600 points as speculators and traders were going into massive sell-offs. Now, why were they going into massive sell-offs? It had to do with this weekend's Twitter tirade. Donald Trump, on his Twitter account, not only went after, of course, the investigation, Democrats, and this, that, and the other about various aspects of things he doesn't like about United States government, he deviated from that and made mention that if he were to get back into office in 2020, or as he put it, when I'm reelected in 2020, if the Chinese don't like what deal he has on the table now, they will really not like him after he wins in 2020. Now, keep in mind that Donald Trump is posturing to President Xi Jinping, knowing that Xi Jinping follows American politics and knows that Donald Trump is under 20-odd investigations and a lot of public scrutiny. There's also a substantial backlash against him for public remarks that he has made in the aftermath of certain stories here. So, President Xi Jinping knows that Donald Trump, despite his tough talking, is only about a year and a half away from being powerless to stop the Chinese. Now, from an economical standpoint, does it make any sense to go after China? The answer is, of course, yes. And the United States in the past has went after China and accused them of things on the world stage, such as monetary manipulations, trade surplus manipulations, and other things that they did to make their product more competitive on the world market than the American product that was comparable to it. We've been in this cycle with China since the late 1980s. However, with this latest amping up of Donald Trump and China's fight, this goes beyond the scope of what a lot of even the most hardline economic people, economic experts, I can say, even the most hard-nosed economists in the United States would not want to get to where we are now. Now, for years, they have said, let's escalate this fight with China because they do manipulate everything. And they also are guilty of massive intellectual theft. And that is a very, very big problem. How many quote-unquote Chinese knockoffs can you find of common big brand products manufactured from other well-known companies? Almost all of them. Almost every single product you can imagine. Seriously, every product. So with that said, the United States has always kind of needed a good fight with China. So when Donald Trump started ramping up his talk against China at the beginning of all of this, before there was the word trade war tossed around, a lot of people on both sides of the political aisle were actually kind of cheerleading his efforts. But this week, we see a president with power unhinged. And what I say by that is, now he's saying, look, I am going to win re-election, and when I do, I'm going to be even tougher on the Chinese than they've ever imagined before, so they better give me my deal now. And if they don't, screw this, we'll give them more tariffs. Now, Trump did announce new and escalating tariff schedules against Chinese manufacturers and products. To that end, China announced yesterday morning that June 1st, they were going to raise tariffs on over a billion United States products that were shipped onto their shores. With all of these escalations of tariffs being escalated on the United States and then being counter-escalated on the Chinese side, world markets lost $1 trillion of growth and potential in a single day. And those effects are going to be felt in markets all around the world. You see, we've moved past the point of this being a United States issue. Instead, Donald Trump has now escalated a global economic crisis. Now, you're probably thinking, yeah, but Shaggy, it's just the wealthiest countries that are losing this value. Yeah, but let's not forget, as the wealthiest countries in the world go, so too go the poorest countries who depend on the wealthiest countries for humanitarian effort, monetary support, and of course, other things like infrastructure support and services that big governments offer small countries for certain diplomatic concessions. Now, with that said, losing $1 trillion in futures on the stock market and on the world global market, that will be nothing. If the Chinese pull through, or if I say the Chinese hold up their end of the bargain, which says June 1st, they are absolutely positively going to raise these tariffs on United States products, United States manufacturers could find themselves frozen out economically from the large and emerging Chinese market. And if you don't think that this is already having consequence, you're saying, well, you know, this is brinksmanship. That's what this is, Shaggy. It's brinksmanship. Donald Trump is playing very hard-nosed because he knows that June 1st is it's a way away. We can ramp up the rhetoric here. We can say, hey, mine's bigger than yours. You know, I guess arm muscles. Donald Trump flexing on Xi Jinping. That would be kind of like Winnie the Pooh. And never mind. But When you say that, well, June 1st is a long way away, let's give the president time to negotiate. Let's not forget, June 1st may be a while away, but ever since the trade war started months ago, the United States agricultural market has taken a substantial hit. You see, China's first tariffs were starting to be levied against agriculture. And if you think tariffs are the end of the story, oh, my friends, you do not know the wonderful diplomatic world of harbor inspection. You see, earlier in the show, I talked to you about how Pago Pago in America, Samoa, had a North Korean ship in it. And as such, that ship was going to have to be emptied, as a cargo ship is. It's fairly large, and they're going to need a lot of space to do that. Well, imagine, if you would, all the individual items that must go into making a ship that size, that full. Okay? You got it in your head? All right. Now, imagine all of that stuff is vegetables. Now, a lot of it is sent over in kind of a pre-ripened state and a little bit of refrigeration, and that does kind of help stave off rotting. A lot of other stuff is just sent packed up as tight as it can be, and with whatever methods of preservation possible for the minimum amount of travel time between port and market. The reason why is because it is very expensive to ship over water. You pay by weight. And if you want to talk about paying and waiting, that's exactly what some of the Chinese harbor masters have been doing to American agriculture products ever since the trade war kicked off. They're stopping perishable goods in harbors waiting to get into Chinese markets, saying that they need to do a quote-unquote random inspection. Now, those random inspections can go anywhere from 3 days to 3 weeks to a month or more. And if you know how vegetables like being just left outside in the hot containers for months at a time, then you can see how this is a problem. But time and time again, every time that Donald Trump has kind of ramped up his rhetoric about what he's going to do to China, the farmers along the Midwest of the United States find themselves the unwilling victims in the crosshair. As much as the trade war is supposed to get us into some sort of balance of trade with China, which, once again, trade deficits, that's not money. That's just kind of arbitrary goals. But if we go through in a successful negotiation and we do get some concessions from China, especially protections against intellectual property theft, that would be very, very huge. If we get there really quickly, we might prevent bankrupting a lot of farmers in the United States. But the way that this is going, with the random quote-unquote safety inspections that agricultural products have to go through, being left to die out in the harbors, less and less of their products meeting the emerging Chinese market, the support for Donald Trump in the Midwest is surprisingly still strong, because they feel that at the end of the day, the trade war will actually open up the Asian markets to more United States agriculture. But will that actually happen? Remember, Donald Trump also promised that coal was going to make a resurgence. It really hasn't. He was also going to bring back a lot of American jobs. A couple of companies came back, but would we qualify it as a lot? No. A lot of them were lost to Andrew Yang's robots. Automation actually took a lot of the jobs that Donald Trump promised to real people. So with all of his track record of not being right on things, when it comes to China and him coming in front of the American public and saying, look, trade wars are easy. Trade wars are easy to win. They're fun. The United States will totally crush the Chinese market. He doesn't understand that right now we're actually crushing a lot of other markets around the world. Markets that depend on the economies of China and the United States, separately and jointly, for their own nation's economic health. So with the trade war going on, please understand that issues like Puerto Rico and the aftermath of, hurricane relief efforts that we are still in investigations over, by the way. We're still investigating why it took the federal government so long to respond and why we didn't do a long-term effort, what happened to the economic support that we usually give them, so on and so forth. With all of this stuff opening up, especially on that front, it does seem kind of odd that Donald Trump is saying, trust me, because he's not coming off too trustworthy right now with everything going on. Now, with the Asian markets, they are most certainly going to be feeling the pinch as the weeks go on. When June 1st comes up, North American markets could find themselves squeezed really, really tightly. And let's not even talk about the poor UK and some of the European Union countries that are right around the point where they're about to throw up the flag and claim their own national economic crises. I mean, come on, think about it. Brexit lost the UK GDP $30 billion that they probably will never see again. And as the Brexit keeps dragging on, they keep losing tens of billions of dollars in their economy year after year after year. Now, with no resolution of them in sight, it does seem likely that the United States would be pressured by European powers to end the trade war with China. But let's not forget Donald Trump likes to act alone. He is a solo gunola kind of guy right now. He's gotten rid of most of his credible advisors. He's gotten rid of all of his safeguards, people like John Kelly and stuff. And now we are in President Trump unleashed. So don't expect some easy type of, hey, let's bring up this inquiry. Oh, look, it led to their kind of neat and on a bow solution to this whole scenario, because it's not going to happen. As long as we're talking about this, a lot of Democrats say the reason that nothing is happening as people expect them to, or as they are supposed to go to, I mean, you know, let's not forget Rudy Giuliani basically said he was going to go to a foreign government for intelligence on a United States presidential election. Lindsey Graham actively told the son of the president of the United States, don't go and testify. You've been there before. Even if it's a subpoena, just go ahead and resist. What are they going to do? Arrest you? With this defiance that we see after the Mueller report was released, we can't forget that when it comes to Donald Trump and all of this ramping up that he's doing with the trade wars, with the anti-immigrant policy. I mean, he was in Florida telling people that it's, okay to shoot immigrants, basically. Alabama, he did the same thing. You know, make it into a game. That's what he was saying. But with all of this kind of stance that Donald Trump has had, it doesn't seem likely that we're going to have too many economic powers come to our side of the battle. Now, let's not forget that China has done something incredibly smart that I've only mentioned once on this show before. And Xi Jinping, president for life, Xi Jinping, brought it up to Donald Trump in a tweet not too long ago that we read on this show. It basically said how foolish the United States was to spend $40 billion on the military. Remember when Donald Trump raised up and said, hey, we're going to increase the military budget by $40 billion, and then that ended up going not so well? Well, there's a reason why. Around the same time that we were ramping up, well, Donald Trump was ramping up the militarism of the United States, the tradeism of China was undergoing a similar facelift. And Xi Jinping has, under his country's big marching order, something called the Road and Belt Project. Now, in case you want to know what this is, it's China's attempt to establish all over its country mass highway thoroughfares for importing of goods from other parts of Asia, Europe, and even, you know, Upper Russia, you know, the Mongolian area. They want all of these areas accessible free and easily through China, through the Belt and Road system. Now, that also means that foreign goods going from one country to another country, not China, could also move through China over these massive, massive highway projects. And as such, those massive infrastructure projects that China has invested over $50 billion in thus far are going to see them gain a net gain of trade that will cripple the United States effort. The reason why is, I hate to say it, but while Donald Trump thinks he's the ultimate deal maker, he's forgotten one of the tenets of his 2015 campaign and some of the rhetoric of his summer of 2016 when he said, so much infrastructure, I'm going to be the infrastructure president. Well, because Donald Trump has, instead of looking at the United States infrastructure, instead of constructively dealing with other countries, remember new NAFTA and how great that's not going? Yeah, with all of that stuff out there, Donald Trump hasn't been really making any deals, nor has he been giving us a whole security blanket should these said non-deals fail. That's where we're at now in this country. Because China will eventually overtake us. I know you're probably thinking, no, it's not. They can't take us, America. Okay, they have a rapid growing economy, and let's not forget their massive population. They are a growing country, and with their Belt and Road package, the one that they're working on that is going to reshape how transit and trade works in every country that touches China, we're going to see them with an advantage that the United States should have had. Instead of doing deals, instead of sitting back and going, well, they owe us. Those immigrants owe us. Our market is great. They should pay us tariffs. Instead of doing all of that, we should have been looking at what China was doing and actually copy part of that process. Because at the end of the day, when it comes to the timeline of events thus far, China has invested so much money in their infrastructure by this point of the trade war that even if things were to go stagnant now, with not only the Belt Project that's happening in China as we speak, the Belt and Road Project, well, the Road and Belt Project, I should say, but not only with that project, but with the whole tariffs and everything, if we were to freeze all of that now, just off of residual growth, China would still emerge ahead of our economy. And with that said, it's high time that no matter who is going to make it to president, it can even be anti-Terminator himself, Andrew Yang. Whoever makes it to office in 2020 better be willing to do more than just talk tough to China. They better be willing to look at the grand scheme of things and say, hey, the United States definitely has an infrastructure shortfall. And we need to fix that. Not now, but right now. Till the next show, love you, mean it. Gate in, bye.